Dossier, Dorn. He was born Doric Harbin in a Balkan village that was swept up in one of the bloody frenzies of ethnic cleansing that swept that region of Earth every few generations. Shortly before his 12th birthday, the militia from the next valley descended on his village, raping, killing, burning everything in their fervent zeal. Doric Harbin saw his mother nailed to a cross, naked, bleeding, dying. The young boy ran away, lived like an animal in the hills, until he was caught pilfering an apple from the kitchen tent of a different militia band. Brought before the group's commander, he was given the choice of joining the militia or being shot. He learned to kill. Remembering what had been done to his mother, his sisters and brothers and father, he marched into other villages and killed everything living in them, down to the livestock and household pets. Carrying an assault rifle that was almost as big as he was, he became an adept killer. But his sleep was haunted by terrible dreams. He saw those he killed, heard the pleas for mercy that he never listened to in waking life. Sometimes in his dreams he killed his own mother. That was when he began taking the drugs that were freely available among the roving militia bands. The narcotics helped him to sleep, helped him to keep on killing despite his nightmares. Peacekeepers from the newly reorganized United Nations finally suppressed the militias and established an uneasy peace in the region. The dead were buried, the fires extinguished, the acrid smoke that hung over the region finally cleared away. Doric Harbin was 16 by then. The peacekeepers recruited him into their forces and tried to train him to enforce the peace with a minimum of killing. It was nonsense, and young Doric knew it. But he allowed his superior officers to believe that he had been rehabilitated. They smiled at his progress as a model peacekeeper and turned a blind eye to his growing dependency on what they termed pharmaceuticals. He was among the peacekeeper troops who were sent to the moon in the UN's ill-fated attempt to wrest control of Moonbase from its rebellious citizens. After that fiasco, once Moonbase became recognized as the independent nation of Selene, Doric Harbin quit the peacekeepers and joined the private security forces of Humphreys Space Systems, Inc. In a short time, he was killing again. This time as commander of spacecraft that attacked other spacecraft in the dark emptiness of the asteroid belt. His prowess came to the attention of Martin Humphreys himself, who personally assigned Harbin to the task of tracking down and killing his arch-enemy, Lars Fuchs. Humphreys also saw to it that Harbin had an adequate supply of specialized drugs, pharmaceuticals that enhanced his battle prowess, that made him sharper, faster, drugs that fed his inner rage. It was in such a drug-enhanced fury that he methodically destroyed the rock rat's habitat, Chrysalis, killing all of the 1,017 men, women, and children aboard. Attacking the ore ship Syracuse was merely a minor skirmish in the immediate aftermath of that slaughter. Once his mind cleared and he realized what he had done, Doric Harbin held a mini-grenade to his chest and detonated it. He knew of no other way to end the horror that obsessed his sleep. But the corporation that literally owned his body would not let him die. Their medical specialists tested their own skills and theories and turned him into a cyborg, half machine, half human, and sent him back to his duties as a mercenary soldier in the employ of Humphreys Space Systems, Inc. The asteroid wars were over by then, forced to an end by the shock of the Chrysalis massacre. Doric Harbin took no credit for the unexpected result of his atrocity. Humphreys Space Systems saw to it that no one learned that the cyborg was the mass murderer. Doric Harbin went about his unexciting duties as mechanically as if he were entirely a machine. But still, he dreamed. Then he was assigned to head the security detail for a small asteroid that the corporation had quietly bought from a rock rat family deep in the belt. Martin Humphreys himself was coming from his home on the moon to inspect the asteroid. There was something inside the rock, something artificial, something staggeringly unusual, something that was perhaps not made by human hands. As part of his duties, Doric Harbin inspected the artifact buried deep inside the asteroid. The experience shattered him. He saw his life, all the pain and horror, all the grief and remorse that filled his dreams. Every day he stood before the artifact. Every day the deeds of his life were peeled away, moment by moment, murder by murder. It was as if he were being flayed alive, one layer of skin after another stripped from his bleeding, quaking flesh. At last, there was nothing left. The personality that he had built for himself since he'd been 12 had been stripped bare, and a new persona, one that had been hidden deep inside his old one, at last came forth. He tore all the insignias of rank from his uniform, turning it into the tattered gray costume of a penitent. Doric Harbin ceased to exist. Out of the warrior came a priest named Dorn, as single-minded in his quest for atonement as he had once been in his missions of murder. He still dreamed when he slept, but now his dreams were of mercy and justice.
Smelter Ship Hunter, Bridge. Elverda saw a glint reflected in the bridge's main display screen. It was Dorn stepping through the hatch, silent as a wraith, the metal half of his face catching the light from the overhead lamps. Touching a keypad with a long, slim finger, Elverda superimposed a navigation grid on the scene their forward camera showed. "There," she said, tapping the screen with her fingernail. "That's the spot." She sensed Dorn nodding as he leaned over her shoulder. "It's empty," she said, turning her head slightly. The human half of his face was so close she could feel its warmth, hear his slow, steady breathing.
"It wasn't empty 5 years ago," said Dorn. "We destroyed a dozen astro warships here.
Led them into a trap, and ran a swarm of pebbles into them." "A dozen ships? How many?" She caught herself and choked off her question. But Dorn understood.
"There must have been at least 10 mercenaries in each ship. Probably more. I've tried to get the exact number from Astro Corporation, but they refused to release such information."
120 men and women.
"At least."
Elverda knew what came next. They would fly a search spiral expanding outward from this site, probing with radar and cameras for the bodies of the dead that had been drifting in space since the battle that had killed them. It would take weeks, perhaps months, to find them all. If they lived that long. With his prosthetic hand, Dorn tapped out a command on the keyboard. The image on the screen changed subtly. "Ultraviolet?" she asked, slightly puzzled.
"Lyman Alpha," he replied. "Ionized hydrogen."
"Why are you looking for ionized hydrogen?"
"Exhaust trail."
With the cool metal fingers of his left hand, Dorn worked the keyboard. Even after knowing him for more than 2 years, Elverda shuddered at the sight of the mechanical hand. She looked up at the main screen and saw that he was panning the cameras 360 degrees, doing a complete sweep around their ship.
"Nothing," she said.
Dorn did not reply. The screen's view climbed up, then swung downward. "We're alone."
"Are we?" he countered. "Humphrey's people know that a battle was fought here. They know that we will come here to seek the dead and give them proper rights."
She gestured toward the screen, empty except for the unblinking stars, so distant and aloof.
"There are no ships out there."
"Perhaps," he said.
"But there is a small asteroid that does not appear on the nav charts."
Almost feeling annoyed at his wariness, Elverda said, "Asteroid orbits change constantly. The charts are never up to date."
"True enough," he said. But let's check out that rock before we proceed further.